Broadcasting from the confines of an abandoned radio station in the secluded apartment building of high strangeness from the foothills of the Colorado Rockies, it's time for full disclosure of the topics they told us were off limits. I'm Connie Willis. This is Coast to Coast AM. Tonight, are we being played by someone or something in a video game? Are we just pawns in their video game? Tap, tap, we're out. Also followed tonight by Open Lines. Time now to turn off the lights and join me for another interesting evening of conversation, much needed education, and the chance that we might get a little closer to the truth of what lurks amongst us and what is beyond. I'm Connie Willis, and this is Coast to Coast AM. You're listening to Coast AM. Hello, I'm Connie Willis. How you doing? You can find me, you know where you can do that, at ConnieWillis.com, ConnieWillis.com, two shows, well, several shows, actually, Blue Rock Talk TV, that is Far Out Thursday, Bigfoot Friday, and something called Project Creepy Hotspots, all live streams, taking you investigating two creepy hotspots that are real, authentic, the real deal. Those of you that are on the fence, well, join my show. Those of you that already know the real deal and you don't want these fake types of shows out there, well, that's why you're at Coast to Coast, first of all, but also you're going to get the real deal. And yes, I get afraid when something is huge next to me and I can just hear it growling. Anyway, it is real. It's the real deal. And if obviously a Coast fan, you can get a nice percentage off. If you just go to my website, ConnieWillis.com, you'll see my show. There, that is Blue Rock Talk. You'll also see another show called Connie After Dark, where we talk and have a good time at a virtual pub. It's a lot of fun. Please join me for either of those. And if you are a veteran, you get half price with Blue Rock Talk always. Always, always, always. Thank you for your help to have us where we are now. So thank you. I can always, that's the way to repay you always for me. So that's how you can find me, ConnieWillis.com. Now, here's a guy. I've been talking to him for a couple different weeks along the way, and he just recently got to speak with a future, you'll see it soon here on Beyond Belief with George Norrie, because he got to do a show with George, taped that, so it'll be coming soon. And he's a very interesting guy. So I grew up in the 80s, right? So I was always doing video games, having a great time. You know, that was our night on Friday night or Saturday night. Once, I guess, we got past the skating rink days, because, yeah, I think it was, you know, after the skating rink days, then it was the video games. We go to, does anybody remember putt-putt? You go to putt-putt, you do a little golf, a little putt-putting, and you put all the quarters that your mom and dad would give you, or you would find in the couch, or you would find anywhere, and you would throw it right in there with Space Invaders and all these other things. And, you know, that was kind of the thing. Then you got Nintendo and Sega, all that kind of stuff. And it was just that world where we kind of started the gig of it all. Now, if I see one, I don't know what to do. Because you can move arms, legs, fingers, you know, thumbs, you can eyes, whatever. It's just too much for me now, but it was so much fun back then. And, you know, it was really like, at one point you kind of did get in the game. I remember doing the 3D stuff and you really felt like you were in there. Well, what if we're in one now? Right? Well, that's what we're going to be talking about now. What if we're in one now? Some people believe we are. I remember in 2012, some dude actually believed that when it went to 2012, we were all going to just go away. And I think I remember he was going to somehow jump from one cliff or one mountain or something to another. I don't know, something. I don't even know what happened. And maybe it was really, really bad, because I didn't never hear anything else about that. So if anybody remembers something even to the tiniest itsy bit of that, please let me know. So our first guest tonight, by the way, open lines later on tonight for sure. And I want to hear experiences. I want people to tell me about some experiences they've had. I love that kind of stuff. It's open lines, but hey, bring it on. You know, I want y'all to tell me what you've experienced. That's the best part for me. That's where we learn what it is that we're here to talk about. So so tonight, Rizwan Virk, a graduate of MIT, awesome, love that, and Stanford, awesome, okay, successful entrepreneur. I guess that kind of almost always follows a graduate of MIT or Stanford mix, but a video game pioneer. He was one of those guys. Film producer, venture capitalist, best-selling author. I don't know. I guess at one point when you do something really well, all of a sudden the rest of it happens. Things you never, ever thought of, you know, you're in the prime light of being able to do. And so he is totally taking advantage of that, having fun. Every picture that you see of him, he's got a big smile on his face, and he's nice to talk to, a successful Silicon Valley entrepreneur and investor. And I told him, I said, you got to watch that Silicon Valley show. If anybody's ever seen it and you like it, make sure you tweet or something to me at one point, because that's one of the funniest shows ever that's ever been on HBO. I remember I did Crypto Connie before. And so it's all about, you know, they got a lot of cryptocurrency stuff going on. It's just fun. It's just a funny, funny show. It's over now, but hey, check out the rerun. So Riz Juan, welcome to Coast to Coast. I'm excited for you to be here. And my biggest question of all, first off, is are you virtual or not?
Hi, Connie. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Are you the real deal?
Well, you know, my impression is that all of us are really avatars in these bodies. An avatar is the term we use in video games for the little character, you know, that you are playing. And so, you know, I guess my short answer to that would be, you know, the reason I wrote the book was I thought there's a good chance that we are actually all living inside a virtual reality. So we're real as far as the virtual reality is concerned, but there's another part of us that's outside of the game that could be playing the game.
Oh, man. Then we could have total control, though. That would be awesome if some of us knew it and some of us didn't. Then we'd have really good control.
Yeah, that's right. We'd have at least some level of control. Now, obviously, it depends on the type of game that we're playing, right? I might be playing a video game where I'm, you know, battling orcs and flying on dragons or flying spaceships. And, you know, one of the questions I get asked a lot is, you know, why would we be inside a video game in the first place? And I said, well, why do you play video games? And part of the reason is to have experiences that you can't have in what we call the physical world, right? That's why, you know, you mentioned these different 3D games going back to the Atari days, which is when I first started playing video games as well. sort of the golden age of early video games, I guess, with Pac-Man and Space Invaders.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, every time I'd play one of those games, like particularly a racing game that was going around the corner with these virtual people in the bleachers, and I would start to wonder, okay, who are these virtual people? Are they there after I stop playing the game? Does this world actually exist? And then I'd see like a mountain, like Mount Fuji off in the background beyond the racetrack and wonder, okay, what's beyond the mountain? Like how much of this world is actually real or rendered and how much is can I only see, you know, from my little perspective in the car? So I guess I'd been thinking about, you know, this for a long time. But, you know, the bottom line is that we can have experiences within video games that we can't have in the physical world. And so it's very possible that that part of us that is outside of the game, which some might say is consciousness or our spiritual self or soul, you know, is inhabiting this body and they're downloading information into it. And they have storylines that they have selected in the same way that, you know, we might select a storyline in a Dungeons & Dragons character. You know, somebody might be a wizard, somebody might be a barbarian, somebody might be a thief who's very stealthy, and you have just these different attributes. And so, you know, my idea is that we've chosen some of these attributes before we come in, and we have a general idea of the storylines that we may, you know, want to play out, but then we're free to make choices along the way in the video game to decide whether we'll level up or what quests or challenges we may, you know, go after.
Dude, I want what you're having. Good stuff. Good stuff. No, I totally followed you on that. I think that's really cool. And, you know, of course, I always go back to that movie. Wasn't it called Avatar when, you know, they'd like go to sleep and they'd be in another world and they'd come back?
Oh, right. Yep, yeah,
they woke up, right?
The movie Avatar, they went to this other planet and then they would, right, they would go to sleep in a kind of virtual reality environment and their consciousness would be downloaded to this other body, which was the natives of that planet, Pandora, I think it was called. I don't remember exactly what the blue guys were called, but they were, you know, 15 feet tall.
They were the blue guys.
The blue guys, right?
Yes. That's what I call them.
It was like you were playing that particular, in that case, it was more like a robot, right? Because they were both in the same physical world, but one was playing the other. And you know, it's a theme that has come up again and again. And in fact, obviously the most popular movie in this genre is The Matrix, you know, which came out in 1999. And in that, which most people have probably seen, Keanu Reeves plays Neo, who's a hacker, who's kind of disaffected with his life, and he finds references to something called The Matrix. And then Lawrence Fishburne shows up as a character called Morpheus, who's named after the Greek god of dreams, tell him that he is really living inside a dream world, and that what he thought was the real world is not the real world. And, of course, then he gets the big choice of taking the red pill or the blue pill to decide if he wants to wake up or if he wants to continue playing the game as he's been playing it. And, you know, it turns out there were a couple of movies that year. So 99 was like the big year of simulation movies. There was another movie called The 13th Floor, where they made a simulated world that they could go in and inhabit the characters of. But then later you find out that they themselves were in a simulated world. So it ended up being like these nested dolls, right, of worlds within worlds, and players playing players playing players with avatars in each of those worlds. Well, it turns out this year, 2021, is actually a bigger year for simulation-related movies, right? There was a documentary called A Glitch in the Matrix that came out in February. There was a movie with Salma Hayek, and I think it was Owen Wilson, called Bliss. And then there's a movie with Ryan Reynolds coming out soon called Free Guy, where he's an NPC. And so an NPC stands for non-player character. And those are the guys in the video game that you might, you know, ask questions of, or that you might fight if they're enemies. So depending on the nature of the game, an NPC can be any kind of character, like an AI within the game. And so Ryan Reynolds is an actual NPC, but he doesn't know it, and then he discovers that he's actually a simulated being, not a real player in the real world, and then he tries to see if he can save his world. So that's coming up, and then The Matrix 4 is coming up as well this year. So, you know, this is shaping up to be the year of simulation-related movies.
Oh, man. Well, I also saw that, you probably heard me earlier. I was like, yeah, once you do something really, really cool, all of a sudden you're doing all these other things you never thought you were going to do. Did you ever think you were going to be a film producer? And, you know, in reading that, because I was like, oh, wow, he's doing films too. Okay. Do you have a film coming up that's going to be similar to that too?
Well, you know, I don't have a film currently, but yeah, I kind of stumbled into the whole film production thing because, you know, my career was in technology. In first enterprise software and then later in video games. And, you know, I ended up meeting some guys on the Navajo reservation who were making a movie about
a
Native American tribe called A Turquoise Rose. And he was trying to raise money for the movie. And he's like, well, nobody will fund it because it's risky. I said, well, you know, in Silicon Valley, we fund risky stuff all the time.
So yes.
Maybe I'll give you a little bit of money, and became a producer as an investor on the show, on that movie. And then later I went on to, you know, help out with movies like that actually the Coast audience might know, like Thrive, What on Earth Will It Take, with Foster Gamble and Kimberly Gamble, and also Sirius, which was about Dr. Stephen Greer and some of the things that he's discovered in the UFO world. And so, you know, and now I'm involved with The Outpost, which is a fantasy series. So I just get involved in the kind of stuff that I like to watch. And so sometimes I'll become a producer. And The Outpost is like a Dungeons and Dragons type TV show on the CW network. In fact, I think season 4 is coming up in July of this summer.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I got to ask, what were you doing on the reservation? What was that about?
Well, I was originally just trying to get away from the cold in Boston.
That'll do it.
Yeah, and, you know, I had always been intrigued, had done some shamanic journeying and had been intrigued by different cultures and different ways in which, you know, they explored consciousness. So that's kind of what led me to kind of explore different tribes and the different traditions. And it turns out, you know, shamanic journeying is very much tied to dreaming and the dream world. And there was a tribe in Arizona called the Maricopa tribe who believed that everything that happens to us in the real world is dreamed of beforehand, whether we remember it or not. And somehow, you know, seeds are planted there and they get rendered, if you will. I'm a video game guy, so I like to use technical terms. you know, they get rendered into the real world. And so I was just exploring that and that's how I ended up stumbling across this movie and then ended up becoming a film producer, which was never my goal or intention, really.
That's what I'm saying. Anytime there's something like that happens, cool. Next thing I know, everybody that ever has done something cool, they end up being a film producer at one point. And I guess that's what it is. You do something really neat, and everybody comes to you with every idea they possibly have. And usually there's a lot of films that are part of that. But it's also fun. My background is also a film. I love it. It's just, it's fun. It's a lot of work, a lot of time to put something together. But, you know, such a reward that is there forever and ever and ever.
That's true, you know, and it is very much independent films, which is where I've been involved, not so not like big studio films like The Matrix with, you know, $100 million plus budget. These small films are usually, you know, a labor of love for the filmmaker.
They are.
And they're not getting paid, and they're barely scraping by enough money to get there. So, you know, I find that to be kind of fun for myself to see if I can get involved. I mean, films are not necessarily a good investment. You know, my day job these days is investing in video game companies and software companies. And, you know, there's the old joke about the film industry, how do you make a little money in the film industry? Well, you invest a whole lot of money in the film industry and it becomes very little.
There was a joke, something like that, with how do you become a millionaire? And I think it was, you start out as a billionaire and then put together like an airline or something. Was that with the Virgin?
Industry. That's the other one, right? That's how you go from a billionaire to a millionaire, is investing in the airline industry. But recently I was just in Arizona again and spoke with the filmmaker who made that very first movie. And so we were talking about, experiences on the reservation with UFOs and sky people. And so, you know, we were brainstorming about that. So we may end up doing a documentary about, you know, kind of native experiences and encounters, you know, with otherworldly beings, which should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So, okay. So let's go back to the beginning where your mind got into this virtual reality thing. What you did, your big deal was Tapfish, right?
Yeah. So that was one of the games that I co-created that did pretty well. It was during the early days of the App Store. So today, everybody's got apps on their phone, right? But back then, it was pretty new, and this idea of downloading apps for free and then having virtual things inside the game. So in this case, we had virtual fish eggs. You would lay the eggs, and then you'd have to go and feed the fish, and you'd have to clean the tank. And so there was all this stuff you had to do. It was what we called a sim game. And
that's not exactly the
kind of simulation that, you know, I'm talking about today, but it was a kind of a mini simulation of an environment. And then we had other games like Tap Birds, which was for simulating different species of birds. And then later I got involved in games that were involved with TV shows, which was also kind of a lot of fun. We did a game for a TV show called Penny Dreadful, which was kind of a horror/victim.
Yeah.
Right, with, you know, Dracula and the Wolfman and all of those characters. And then I became an investor in the video game industry, and I worked with companies like Telltale Games. They had a very successful Walking Dead game, which was one of the most successful story-based games. And then I was an early investor in a company called Discord, which, you know, is typically people my age haven't used it, but our kids and our nephews and nieces have all played with Discord. It's like a chat app. So while you're playing video games, you can talk live with your friends.
Yes. I was actually a part of that when I was doing Crypto Connie, because all the crypto people, I guess, were also involved in Discord, because that's how I learned about it. And Discord's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's right. Discord is now, it's not used just by gamers. It started off actually as a game company that failed. The game didn't.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
But then, you know, they had created this this platform for people to talk to each other with voice that was much more convenient than Skype for gamers. And then they added, you know, forums and messaging and all of that stuff, and it just became hugely successful. So it's kind of
fun. Oh, so when the people were playing those video games, and if you were in Hawaii and I was in, you know, Australia or whatever, we're playing together, we're talking to each other through that.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, you know, many games will have that built in, but when it started, that really wasn't available in most games. So they made it really convenient. So people would just hang out with their friends and from Hawaii and Denver or wherever and play video games together.
How fun and how addictive, and how you would just get, who would ever want to leave that? So, all right. I love this. I love this stuff. So if you're just now tuning in, we're talking to Rizwan Burke, and he's telling us about, hey, Maybe we're in virtual reality. Maybe we are inside the Matrix. Maybe we are a little pawn in the game. Maybe when he put together tap fish, tap bird, tap this, tap that, maybe it was all about us. And maybe we were awakening to what is really going on. We'll get a little deeper into it and see how deep he's gone into it. Even though he did go a little deep earlier on, we'll ask him more questions about that. So thanks for joining us. Connie Willis here. Hope everything's going well for you. And hey, this is good stuff for sure. Open lines coming up later. Right now, Coast to Coast AM. You're here with us. Thanks. Welcome back to Coast AM. Connie Willis here discussing virtual reality, being inside the Matrix. We're in a video game along with Rizwan Virk. Riz, can you give more of your background? Where this incredible name that you have that's so fancy and special. I love it. Rizwan and Virk. Can you tell me more about your past and where you're from and your childhood as what were you doing that you became a game guy? I love it.
Sure. So, I was actually born in Pakistan. And so Rizwan is actually a pretty common name out there. But I grew up mostly in the Midwest, in Michigan and, of all places, North Dakota. And, I write a little bit about this in my book, The Simulation Hypothesis. But like you, I was part of that generation that got out the quarters. And then we'd go to the local D&B pizza, and we'd sit there and spend all our quarters. And then after we'd spend our quarters playing games, we'd watch the older kids who had more quarters than we did, continue.
Yes.
And so we'd be like kind of looking over their shoulder, watching them, especially when new games came out, like Dragon Lair, which was kind of like more like a cartoon than an actual game. But, it was in those days that I really began to wonder about, what kind of a world was in there. And then, I was a fan of science fiction growing up, and I was a big fan of Star Trek, The Next Generation. And they had this thing called the holodeck, where you could go into a room and it would basically create a virtual reality that looked very real to the point where, you could forget that you're actually inside a virtual space. And you'd also have these virtual characters that were inside there. And so I remember this one episode that really made an impression on me was when Data and Captain Picard and all these guys were going in. It was a Sherlock Holmes adventure, and Data is being the android from Star Trek The Next Generation. And turns out they gave a computer a challenge, which was to make an opponent for him. He was playing Sherlock Holmes, but to make an opponent that was just as smart as he was. And the opponent was Professor Moriarty, who was Sherlock Holmes' nemesis back in the old stories from the late 1800s. And what happened in this episode was that Professor Moriarty figured out that they were inside a virtual reality. And he found it strange that some of the guys in this Sherlock Holmes adventure came from out there, meaning outside the holodeck to the rest of the Enterprise. And meanwhile, he was stuck in there, and they kept kind of referring to this thing. And so he wanted to come out of there. And I remember that really got me thinking, well, how do we know that we're not, inside this kind of a reality? So it was really later on, though, after, doing these video game companies, that I was visiting a company in Marin County, which is across San Francisco Bay from the city. And they had this beautiful office. You could see, the San Francisco skyline. But they were building a virtual reality ping pong game. And so I put on the headset. I was in this room, and there was an opponent and a table that appeared in front of me. And I started to play, and I was actually moving my hands as if I had a paddle. And it felt so realistic. Every time, the ball would hit the paddle, I felt a little, like it was so responsive that it felt like I was hitting a real ball on a real table. So much so that by the end of the game, I forgot that this was a virtual reality. And I tried to put the paddle down on the table and lean against the table. Of course, there was no table, and the controller fell to the floor, and I almost fell over, and that's when I did a double take. I said, oh, wow, our virtual reality is getting so good, and it turns out it was the physics engine and the responsiveness that was great. I mean, the graphics weren't even that great because this was like 4 or 5 years ago, and today's ping pong games have even better resolution, but that we're getting to the point where we could build something that you would forget that there was a physical world outside. And so I decided to come up with that's what I call the 10 stages on the road to the simulation point. And so the simulation point I define as this kind of abstract point where we can create virtual realities that are indistinguishable from physical reality, which would be games like The Matrix, where Neo didn't realize that he was actually outside the Matrix because it became so engrossing. And so I try to lay out, you know, each of these stages in my last book, The Simulation Hypothesis, and tried to figure out, well, when will we get there, right? And we're at about stage 3 or 4 right now, and with a little bit of 5, which is, you know, VR, virtual reality, AR, augmented reality. And then we get into brain-computer interfaces, which is something that's actually going on now. You know, you've probably seen the video of Elon Musk with a pig with a chip in his brain.
Tell me more as you're describing it, though, because I don't know that, no.
So he has a company called Neuralink, and they had a video where they were going to read the electrical signals from the pig's brain, and eventually, you know, they want to put the chip in humans, but that's called an invasive brain-computer interface. There are also many companies that are coming out with non-invasive, so you put like a little headset on, and it reads the electrical signals, and then it tries to figure out what your intention is. So there are companies that will let you, that will figure out, you know, when you want to click on a mouse, especially for people that are disabled. You know, it becomes a way to for them to be able to interact. But so we're getting better at that, but we're still pretty far away from a brain-computer interface like The Matrix, where the signal goes in and you see, you know, everything that would be in that virtual world in your brain, and then you make choices, and those get sent out. But so it'll be a few years before we get there. And then there's the AI component of having intelligent AI that are indistinguishable from real people. And so, again, we're in the early stages of that, but things are moving along. You know, there are these virtual influencers on YouTube, like Little Michaela, and I just talked to a woman who created a company that has a virtual character called Kookie, and you can sit and talk to her. And she's talked to, like, millions of people already. She started off as a chatbot, and now they're going to have an actual, you know, virtual version of her as well. And so, you know, we're getting better and better at creating these AIs that we won't be able to distinguish. It's called passing the Turing test.
It's a broadcaster's nightmare, you know, because any actor or any broadcaster, anybody that's on the air for a living, it's all over when that happens for us.
Well, have you seen the broadcasters they have in China? They have these news broadcasters, and they're reading the news, and they look pretty realistic. Of course, I don't speak Chinese, so I can't tell you exactly how good they are. But it's actually, I mean, their facial expressions are fairly realistic. Now, they're just reading scripts. So you can't really interact with them, and that's where I think, you know, we have a few years to go before we get there. And so my estimate was within 50 years, maybe 100 years at the most, we would get to the point, the simulation point, where we could create virtual characters and immerse ourselves in a virtual reality, and we would forget that we existed outside of that and that wasn't the real world. And so then I began to investigate, well, if we can get there, turns out maybe someone's already gotten there, and there was a professor at Oxford named Nick Bostrom, and he wrote a paper in like 2003, so it was just a few years after The Matrix came out. Are you living in a computer simulation? And his point was, if any civilization anywhere in the galaxy, assuming there's a physical galaxy out there, gets to this point, they will create lots of simulated worlds, not just one, because all you need is a new server, right? You just fire up the server, and another 7 billion people, another 10 billion or a trillion people are created, and that the number of virtual worlds would outnumber the real world. There was only one real world in that scenario. We call it base reality is the term he used. And so his argument was, if anyone ever gets there, then we're probably already inside a simulation, because there are many more simulated worlds than there are physical worlds. And if we're in a world, it's more likely to be a simulated world. And so it turns out this has actually started to be taken more seriously in academia since his paper. And, you know, Elon Musk also came out in, I think, 2016, the same year that I was playing the virtual reality ping pong game. And his point was 50 years ago or 40 years ago, we had Pong. I don't know if you remember Pong. It was actually the first.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
Animal, right?
You weren't cool if you didn't have Pong, man. That was like the first one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the first. It was the first widely available video game. There were some on mainframes and some.
It was so slow. That ball would never get there. You're like, come on.
That's right. But basically, you know, what Elon Musk came out and said was that, well, 40 years ago, we had Pong, which was two squares and a dot going back and forth. And as you pointed out, it was really slow. You had to, like, watch it go across the screen.
And you'd still miss it, you know?
Yeah, because it was so slow to respond to your controls, right?
Yes.
But if you look at where video games have gotten in 40 years, we now have, you know, 3D virtual worlds like World of Warcraft. We have Fortnite, which is very popular with a certain age demographic. And so we also have virtual reality. And so if you think of that progress, where are we going to be in another 40 years? Where will we be in another 400 years, which in the cosmic scale is just sort of the blink of an eye, right? I mean, so it's not that far off. So civilization that was 1,000 years ahead of us or 10,000 years ahead of us would already be able to create totally immersive simulations. And so it was these two guys, Nick Bostrom at Oxford and Elon Musk, who really kind of put this idea out there. And it was around the same time I was trying to figure out how could we get to, in 2016, you know, how do we get to that point? What technology would we need to build? And that's really what led me to write this book and explore this idea, you know, both from technical perspective, but also from a quantum physics perspective and from a religious and mystical perspective as well.
You got it all rolled up into one. Now, I got a question for you, but I wanted to just remember bowling? Bowling, that bowling thing was so good. You also felt like you were at a bowling alley. Do you remember the bowling?
I don't remember that. Oh, was it the one at, like, in an arcade or at home?
No, it was, you played it at home, and it was, golly, I don't know if it was Sega or Nintendo or what, but you bowled, and it was a blast. It was a blast.
It was, yeah. I mean, I think I do remember seeing that now. I don't remember. I never actually played it, but I saw other people playing it.
Oh, man. No, you had to play. It was like the biggest thing. Where were you? Come on. Now I'm disappointed. Well, you have to look it up.
Sega years, it was my younger brother. I was off at college, and he was.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you probably missed it. You're right. I mean, it was like, I mean, it knew when you released the ball. It you know, if you held on to it too long, it would do just like at the alley. It would bounce over. It was amazing.
So if you think of that and what made it amazing, it was almost the controls and what we call the physics engine as well, right, which kept track of if you let it go at this point. And I remember a pool game like that too, where depending on when you hit, you know, when you indicated the stick should hit the cue ball, you know, then it would hit it or not hit what you were aiming at. But it was really that physics engine that was the key. And so the better the physics engine, the more realistic the game actually looks. I mean, it's not a matter of pixels anymore. I mean, we were talking about 8-bit pixels in the Atari days and 16-bit computers in the days of Nintendo and Sega. And today we have 32-bit and we have 64-bit. But if you watch a movie like you know, the latest Star Wars movies or King Kong versus Godzilla, you know, they're pretty good at making the special effects look like they blend into the real buildings. Or like in Blade Runner, 2049, when the car flies, right? It looks pretty realistic. And that's because digitally they can manipulate those pixels, and they're only at like 2K pixels when you go to the movie theater. But we already have 4K pixel screens and 8K pixel screens coming out. So the resolution is good, but it's really the ability to render it quickly in real time that and then the physics engine that has to calculate everything in real time. When you have a lot of people playing at once, that's the real trick in making these games realistic.
Ah, okay, that makes sense. One of the things you said, too, reminded me of when you were talking about being, like, kind of stuck in a game. I don't know, I thought of Bill Murray in Groundhog Day when he kept being just stuck and stuck and stuck and stuck, you know. And if we are in, you know, one right now ourselves, that would have been one of those types of things. Man, I just can't get past this. I got to, restart, reboot kind of thing. In fact, that would be great if we did know we were and we could reboot once in a while from what just happened.
That's right. Well, sometimes, you know, we have the sense of deja vu. That you know, we're living the same thing again, and so there was a pretty well-known science fiction writer named Philip K. Dick, you know, on whose book Blade Runner and Minority Report and Total Recall were based. And as part of my research for the simulation hypothesis, I interviewed his wife, Tessa Dick. I think she's even been on Coast at one point. And she was telling me that, you know, he believed he was reliving the same moment again, but with different variables changed. And there was a very famous speech that he gave in France in like 1977, so well before The Matrix, where he said, you know, we are living in a computer-programmed reality, and the only clue we have is when some variable is changed or some alteration occurs in our reality. And so according to her, he actually really believed that there was someone outside the computer program reality and that they were tweaking things and then rerunning things. And turns out there's a show recently that was really popular on Amazon called The Man in the High Castle, which is about an alternate timeline where Germany and Japan won World War II and they took over America and they divided it between them. And so, you know, he said that he remembered that timeline. These were like, this wasn't just fiction, it was actually memories. And so he came to believe that somebody had that timeline, they ran it for a while, and then they rewound and then restarted another timeline. And then in this timeline, you know, obviously that didn't happen. The Allies won the war, and it led to a very different outcome. And so, you know, his point was a lot of these, what we today would call glitches in the Matrix, are clues that something is being rerun again, and there's something that's stuck in memory, and that they're clues that something is being changed. And so I, you know, I found that idea really intriguing. In fact, my next book is called The Simulated Multiverse, which is about this idea that there might actually be multiple timelines. And it's, you know, coming out in September. It's available for pre-order now. But it, you know, the more I thought about it, the more it made sense to me that if there is more than one timeline, it would make sense that we are in a simulated world, because then it's really easy. You can just save the game state, restart the timeline, and have it go in another direction, and then you can rerun it again. So you can have as many different timelines as you want. So you kind of end up a little bit with this Groundhog Day scenario where you could be rerunning the same things. For the same reason that, you know, we run simulations of the weather, we want to see where it's going to end up, or simulations of, you know, animal populations or whatever it is. Whoever's outside the simulation could run the simulation and see how it went, and then if they didn't like it, Philip K. Dick called it, you know, the programmer, sort of another name for, you know, whoever the creator would be, that it could change those variables. And in fact, there was a movie called The Adjustment Bureau that came out a few years ago with Matt Damon and Emily Blunt, and you know, Dick wrote that story. It was called The Adjustment Team because he went to the bathroom and he thought there was like a light switch, but instead there was a chain. And he's like, I know there was a switch, not a chain. And so he started to wonder if people were making little changes in things. And he came up with this idea for the story where the adjustment team would freeze things, they would change things, and then they would rerun them. And I find that whole concept, you know, quite intriguing, but it's like a core loop, like running with a computer, where we can go back and experience the same things again and again.
And that's also sounding like the Mandela effect that he's talking about as well. There's a little bit of Mandela going on there, so we'll have to ask him a little bit more about that. Connie Willis here. If you are just now joining us, we're talking with Rizwan Virk. He's talking about virtual reality, being within a game, you know, just being a part of it, one of the pawns, and all the things that go along with that. So open lines a little bit later tonight, and more, of course, with Rizwan coming up here on Coast to Coast AM.